Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive and to help me make it through grad school, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
Teach me to walk in the light of His love. Teach me to pray to my Father above. Teach me to know all the things that are right. Teach me, teach me to walk in the...
So do the kids ever just say, Daddy won't be in the celestial kingdom with us, or I'm not going to church anymore because Daddy isn't going, or, you know, what about the kids' testimonies and commitment to the church with Daddy not being a believer?
Well, I think that that's definitely something that people could be concerned about. But I see so many part member families where one of the spouses isn't even a member, finding ways of making it work that I'm not too worried about it. And also, I don't want my children going to church because they feel like they have to. I want them to find the faith that makes them happy. And I want them to understand, look, you don't have to believe everything that the church teaches in order to find favor with God. You can feel this way about something or that way about something. You do not check your opinions and personalities at the door when you go to church on Sunday. I don't think that they need to be screaming at the top of their lungs everything that they think and feel. But I also don't think that they need to be pinned down, so to speak. I want my children to understand the things that my husband knows. I want them to gain a knowledge of the things that he believes and the historical issues of the church that caused him to lose his faith. I want them to slowly learn about these things in a safe environment, in a safe way, so that I don't send my son out on a mission who doesn't understand that there's all these different sides to the story. If he can learn all of these things and still have a testimony and still want to be a missionary, what a missionary he'll be.
But would it be heartbreaking if your kids left the church?
Well, I think that at one time in my life, I would have felt that way. I think I've come to a place where I just want my children to be happy. I just want my family members to be happy. I will do everything I can to give them my culture and my faith, but my husband is also their parent, and they need to understand his faith and his beliefs. And ultimately, everybody has to find their own testimony anyway.
Yeah, it's not like having both parents remain believers is a guarantee that your kids are going to stay in the church. I mean,
nope.
Overwhelmingly, the people I know who have left the church, both of their parents were devout, active believers. So,
yeah,
it's two things are certain. Members aren't the only people who's, I don't know how to say this. Basically, your kids can go off the deep end as non-members, and they can go off the deep end as members. Your marriage can go off the deep end as non-members, and it can go off the deep end as members, and your kids can remain members with a disbelieving parent, or they can leave the church with both parents fully believing. True?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Still, man, it's got to be hard to contemplate your kids not choosing Mormonism. I mean, it is for me.
Well, I think that it depends on how you define Mormonism. My husband is a member of the Latter-day Saint Church. He was baptized. He joined the church. He's a member. I don't know if he would say that he was ever fully a Mormon, because he never really assimilated into the culture.
Right.
Now, for me, I'm a Mormon. Anybody that tries to tell me that somehow I'm not because I believe one thing or another thing differently than they do, well, they're going to get a fight from me, because, by golly, this is my church. My parents gave me this church. And this is it's my spiritual language, just like English is my spoken language. This is how I commune with God, and it's as much a culture for me as a faith. Right. And I think that Mormonism is a culture. And so for my children, even if they were to some reason stop being LDS, I think that they'll always be Mormon. And I think that the faithful works that have been done by members of my family and my ancestors, those all mean something. And I don't think that a loving Heavenly Father is going to be a hatchet man. I don't think that he wants to cut any of us off. I think he wants us there with him.
So maybe somehow you have a faith that it's all going to be worked out in the end.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yep. Kind of banking on the faith thing.
Right. So this is going to be a hard question for you to be honest about. Compare Eric Three Faces as a husband and as a father, sort of pre-disaffection, in the heat of the disaffection, where you guys weren't on the same page, and where he is now. And what I'm specifically looking for is he happier, not happier? And most importantly, has he become neglectful of you and of the kids, less of the father, less of the husband that he was as a true believer? And this is obviously asking you to, you know, share something really personal. I can't imagine you're going to ever say that he's not, but I think you could sell us if he is at least every bit as good, if not better. I think you could make that sale. If it turns out he's slid down, I imagine you're not going to be able to be truthful about that. But are you able to speak to that at all?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there are days when he's angry, and it's not that he's angry at me. He's just, you know, angry at the situation, and I would not say that he is unkind. It's just that he's angry. I know that before this all happened, we had a great marriage, but it had not always been a perfect marriage. When you're married for 22 years, you have ups and downs. We had already gone through so much and fought for our marriage through that 22 years that we had a lot of the tough stuff behind us. And when we both determined, look, we're going to make this work, whatever we have to do, things really started to get better. Better than they were before his disaffection. I have found him to be happier in general than he was before his disaffection. because I think that he finally understands, okay, this is one of the reasons why I always had this question. This is why I never felt comfortable about that. I never understood this, and now I understand why. For him, there is much more clarity, and I think he feels free in a certain respect, because he does not feel like there is this checklist that God is keeping score with him. And I think that he just feels a weight that is off of his shoulder, in the sense that, okay, now I get it. Now I know why I was always feeling this way. And because of that, I think that it has opened him up to feeling some emotions that maybe he kept closed off before, because I will say that he is a more caring father. He's more involved with our children than he was before the disaffection. Not that he wasn't involved with them, but now it's more, I guess, maybe, I can't really speak for him, but I get a sense that it's, if this life turns out to be all we have, I'm going to make it the best life that I can for my wife and my kids. I really feel that about him, that it's, look, this is what we got, and it's going to be wonderful. We're going to make it wonderful. And he's kind to me. He is less angry in general than he used to be, and he's a better husband. I think because he has just opened himself up to the possibility that maybe this is all there is, and I'm not going to waste a minute of this life. And I remember him saying something to me of that effect, that he did not want to waste one more day of his life doing something that he didn't believe in. And that's why it is so difficult for him to go to sacrament meeting, because he feels like, here I am sitting in this meeting, I don't believe this, and I'm wasting my time because there are so many other things that I could be doing. And yet he does it. He sacrifices that time for our family. I think it's, you know, heroic in some respects, because I know how stressed out I get if I'm in a meeting that I think is a waste of time.
Sure. All right, let's flip it now. How about you? Do you wish in your heart of hearts you could roll it all back and go back to where both of you were more literalistic believers? He was in and things were simpler. And, you know, whether or not you would roll it back, how's your happiness, joy, satisfaction now versus before and during the crises?
Well, the question, you know, would you roll it back if you could? That's always, you can't. And I'm the kind of person that is I'm rather realistic in the sense that you cannot roll it back. So wasting my time entertaining fantasies like that, it doesn't get me anywhere. But I've thought about it, and I would not go back. I guess this is just selfish on my part, but I enjoy an intimacy with my husband now that I did not have before. I feel like my husband and I are sort of like trapeze artists, but without a net. And the only way that we're going to make this work is by holding tighter to each other and just not letting go. And I feel like this, although at the beginning it was so painful and so frightening, now I feel like it's just been a blessing in my life. It's one, it's opened emotional doors for me that were not there before. And spiritually for me, I have had to look at a lot of the same issues that my husband has looked at. Some of the things I agree with him, and other things I have to say, well, I just don't know. But once you sort of embrace the idea of living by faith, it can change so many aspects of your life. And having everything decided and known can make you feel safe, but it's not as thrilling as the way it feels to know that there's no net. It's pretty exciting right now in my life.
Interesting. Let's have you bring things to a close a bit by giving two sets of summary advice. Some of the people listening are the believing spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And their spouse is where your husband was back in May.
Yeah.
He just fell off the cliff. What are the do's and don'ts you would give to the believing spouse on how to act and how not to act when their spouse loses their faith, and then flip it around? What advice would you give the disbelieving spouse on a humane way to approach it with the family?
Well, for the believing spouse, I guess I would say that the first thing that you've got to do is decide that you're going to make your marriage work. There is, you know, I hear so many arguments for divorce that I feel are false arguments. Well, is it better to get divorced or to, you know, stay together and be fighting all the time? Well, that's a false choice. You can stay together and find ways of making things work. It's the same thing with disaffection. You do not have to present yourself with false choices. You can allow yourself to have other choices than what you think are on the table. One of the options is to say to yourself, I want to make my marriage work, and I'm going to find ways of being loving and accepting of my spouse. The second thing I would say to the believing spouse is that you need to let go of the control and the feelings of guilt and responsibility, that somehow you are big enough or faithful enough or strong enough to change your spouse's mind and bring them back into the church. I think it is so important to remember that when Jesus was on the earth, he did not convert everyone. They crucified him. And no matter how much we believe or how strong our faith is, it isn't necessarily transferable to our spouse. They have to find their path that is going to make them happy, and we have to be willing to step back and let them kind of find their way. It doesn't mean that we abandon them. It means that you can say, okay, I'm going to walk beside you. I can't take that same path with you, but I'm going to walk beside you. On one of the online boards, I made the comment that when my husband was first going through this, he joked with me that he's out wandering in the mists of darkness, but I was holding to the iron rod, and I just told him, well, you are my Mr. Incredible, and I'm Elastigirl, and I can hold on to the iron rod and you at the same time.
That's great.
And so I think that letting go of feelings of guilt and this feeling that you have to be able to control and keep them in line, I think that letting go of those is very freeing to the believing spouse. It's not your fault. It's not your responsibility. This is happening to thousands of people. It is not just you. Thousands of people are going through this. And somehow, we've got to find a way to reduce the collateral damage that's happening to families. I guess the one other thing that I would suggest is that we've got to keep in mind that our homes belong to us. Our husbands, our wives, whether they believe or don't believe, have every bit as much of a place in our home. I often hear people say, well, I will not have coffee in my home, or I will not have that in my home, or this in my home. Well, at our house, it's his home too. And I want my husband to feel like this is his home as much as it is mine, and that his heart is welcome here, and his beliefs are welcome here. And as long as the things that we are doing are sharing with sincerity and respect for each other, then I think that we need to have our homes be a safe place where people can be who they are. Now, for the disaffected spouse.
Wait, sorry, one last thing.
Okay.
Sorry, this is wonderful. The implication, one of the implications of what you're saying to the believer is, Jackie, you're asking me to let die my hopes of an eternal marriage, of being in the celestial kingdom with my spouse and with my children. You're saying, let it go, let it die. And I could
That's
get
not,
I could I could well I know you'll have a response, but
yeah,
they're saying I could get out of this marriage now while there's still time, while I'm still attractive enough to find somebody else. I could find someone who's worthy. I could find someone who's going to take me to the celestial kingdom, and I don't have to let die what's most important to me. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say that if the idea of a celestial marriage is more important to you than actual eternal marriage and eternal love with the person that you took vows with, then I don't know if you understand why eternal marriage is so important. It's not just so that you have, you know, somebody there forever. It's because you have the person that you love more than anything in this world with you forever. I understand that people believe that they could leave a marriage and go find somebody else. But if that's how you really feel, then do you truly love your spouse now? Do you really have an eternal marriage? I believe in the sealing power, but what drives it, I don't know. Is it a function of the priesthood? Sure, maybe. But maybe it's also a function of how much we love each other. Maybe that is the sealing power. Eternal love. I plan to love my husband so strong and so hard that there isn't a power in the universe that could separate us.
Perfect. Beautiful. Okay, you were saying the disbelieving spouse.
For the disbelieving spouse, I guess my number one bit of advice for the disbelieving spouse would be that when you come out to your believing spouse, try to not be in such an emotional state that you are out of control of your emotions. And this is such an emotional thing that I know that it's hard, but I know that part of what was so upsetting for me was that my husband was just, he was so frantic and upset that I, before he even told me anything, I was upset. I was starting to cry. My husband is crying. What could possibly be going on? I didn't know if things were so terrible that he thought, you know, he wanted to divorce me, or, I mean, every horrible scenario was running through my head, and he had not said a single word to me. So that's partly my fault for being too emotional sometimes, but try to be calm and try to speak in language that is ever so kind and ever so respectful of the tender feelings that your spouse is going to have for this faith. You know, we're raised in this faith to love the church and to feel like it is part of who we are. And that was a real difficulty for me when my husband was rejecting the church. I could not understand how he could love me, because I'm a Mormon girl, you know? And it's not like you can't tell I'm a Mormon from the minute I start talking. I have that weird Mormon twang, whatever it is, when we speak. It's just, you can just tell. And I just couldn't figure out how he could still love me, because his feelings for the church had changed so much. I just didn't know how he could love me anymore. And so I think that you have to be very reassuring to your spouse of your love for your spouse, which he was, but also be very careful in your language of how you talk about the church. So some of my husband's language was, you know, harsh, because his feelings were harsh. And I know that you, John, gave him some good advice to be careful of some words to use. For instance, the fraud word is very, it's kind of like being slapped. It hurts. It's not a good word to use. And I also think it's important that you present your newfound information to your spouse very carefully. Edit it down to the easiest possible way of explaining it. And present it in the sense of, I found this information, and this is how I feel about it. Because chances are good that your spouse is not going to feel the same way that you do. And if you are coming at the believing spouse from the perspective of, look, these are facts, this is the way it really came down, we're all being misled, we've been duped, it's going to bring up that, you know, fight or flight response, and your spouse is either going to run the other direction or get ready to fight. And I don't think that you want either one. You want to be able to have a dialogue. And what I have found is that a lot of people that are going through this disaffection process are not necessarily in their 40s, like my husband and myself. They're in their 20s or early 30s, and they don't have 22 years of marriage behind them. And so this is a very delicate time. You need to be as delicate talking about these issues with your spouse as you would be if you had done something to lose their trust in the marriage. Not that they are equal in the sense of, like I said, I don't consider doubting or disbelief to be a sin. But the results of the conversation that you're going to have with your spouse are going to be as devastating in the early stages. There's just no way of getting around it. Because everything that they've sort of been banking on and sort of, they don't even think about it because it's just part of, you know, what's going to happen in their mind, that all of a sudden their entire world is going to be changed. And so coming at it from that perspective, just be delicate, be kind, be willing to accept the fact that your spouse may not believe the same things that you believe, and be willing to negotiate. And this is important on both sides. I come at this from a different direction than other people might. If you're a believing spouse and having the children 100% active in the church and no knowledge of the disbelieving spouse's beliefs, that's a hard line. That is telling your spouse, look, I don't value what you think and feel. But if that is a deal breaker for you, be kind, but be honest about it. If you're the disbelieving spouse, please understand that some of the initial reactions of your believing spouse will change. They are in shock, just like you were in shock when you found the information that caused your disaffection. You felt betrayed. You felt lied to. You felt devastated, like your whole world has come crashing down. Well, you're about to do that same thing to your believing spouse. Try to do it in a way that is kind. Try to be there to pick up the pieces. Sometimes it's not fair. Sometimes the disaffected spouse has to bear the brunt of all of the anger and the ultimatums and you've got to do this, you've got to do that. Sometimes that's the way it is. That's unfortunate. Sometimes the believing spouse has to be the one that is the most willing to bend and give because the doubting spouse is going through so many changes so rapidly. All I can say is that for both sides, time really is your friend. The things that are causing you so much pain today, in a year's time, will be softer and will not feel so harsh. Try to hang in there long enough to let some of these feelings soften. Try to understand that eternal love is the reason for eternal marriage. We need to love our spouses so much that eternal marriage is sort of the natural consequence to a life on this earth of loving each other so much that, oh, well, of course we're going to be together because there's nothing that can keep us apart.
Were there, last question, other than okay. If you want to share, a sense of the pillar. I was thinking about asking you about the kind of the pillars of your faith as a final question. But before I do that, were there any external resources that you and your husband took advantage of that helped you both constructively work through things and helped you get ideas or feel like you weren't alone? You know, were there any, can you point people to any types of resources to help them through, in addition to the advice you gave about how they treat each other?
Well, I think that marriage counseling is always a good idea for people that feel like their marriage is seriously in trouble. This is going to sound like maybe kind of a hard thing for the believing spouse to hear, but I don't think that it's necessarily the best idea to go to an LDS counselor, because their view is going to be somewhat skewed towards, you know, faith in the church, that everything will be fine if this person just comes back to the church. And I think that it's sort of a disregarding the needs of the doubting or the disbelieving spouse. I think that you need somebody completely neutral, not an LDS counselor, but a good marriage family therapist that can help you work through some issues on how to communicate, on what it's like to have an interfaith marriage. Because believe it or not, there are thousands, millions of people across the world that have marriages to a spouse that is not of their faith. And find some good tactics for making that work. I also have found that Faces East helped me immensely.
Okay, tell us what that is.
Faces East is an online community. It's at faceseast.org. And it is committed to the ideal of eternal marriage, but it's basically set up where believing spouses come together for support. Everyone there is either married to a non-member or mostly married to disaffected members. Mostly is women on there, but there are some men. And we love to have more men come because we like to get that perspective. Basically, we offer support to each other and logistical advice. How do I get through this baptism next year? Because my husband does not want our daughter to be baptized, or my wife is discouraging our son from serving a mission. You know, whatever it is, we offer logistical, real life advice of what we're doing to kind of make things work. We also talk about some of the issues that our spouses found that caused them to leave the church, and what that means for us, and how our testimonies have changed. So that is a great resource. And of course, for the doubting spouse, you probably already know all of the amazing communities that are out there to offer support for people that are either trying to stay in the church and make it work, or trying to leave the church and, you know, maintain sanity, whatever it is. There's a lot of the online sources, New Order Mormon, Stay LDS. I know that there is several others, I think Post-Mormon and Ex-Mormon. I'm not as versed in those sites. I visit them occasionally because I want to understand my husband's perspective, but I'm more of a lurker than anything else.
And those have been helpful to you guys to get ideas and not feel alone and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I think that my husband is not a big poster. He does not write very much on any of these websites. He's a very quiet, you know, contemplative person, but reading everyone's experiences, I think, is very helpful for him. And it can be helpful for a lot of people. You don't have to post anything, but finding out, I think the most important thing is finding out that you're not alone in the situation. I think that helps a lot. And learning, just like on Faces East, learning some practical ways of dealing with the logistics of living this kind of a lifestyle. And it is so easy for me to say, well, just do this, or just let your husband have some coffee, no big deal. But for some people, it is a big deal. Some people have children that maybe want to get married in the temple soon. How do I find the strength to be honest with myself and be able to talk to my bishop and have a temple recommend so that I can see my child be married? I think that there are ways of working through it. I think that learning that the world isn't as black and white as we often think it is helpful. And those sites can offer real world advice to help the doubting person sort of maneuver this kind of weird journey.
Sure.
That's not disrespectful to call it weird, is it?
Well, it's definitely, you know, not the not what we thought would play out in many cases.
Yeah, but I think that as Mormons, we should be the most open to variations on a theme.
Yeah.
Because almost everything about our religion is a variation on what most people think and feel and believe. And if we're a peculiar people, you know, maybe we just need to be able to be a little more peculiar once in a while.
All right. Well, maybe let's end just by sharing with us your, you know, the pillars of your faith as they currently stand. Where is your faith anchored these days?
Well, I feel like my faith is definitely anchored in my family, that I believe that serving my husband and serving my children and keeping our family together and happy is the best way I can serve God. I really feel like if I'm the only example of how I would want to be treated and of how I feel that Christ would treat my husband, if I'm the only example that my husband gets to see, then it better be a good one. And I'm going to try to love my family the way that Christ loves me. I feel like that's the best thing I can do right now. I believe in my eternal marriage. I have a testimony. I totally believe in the sealing power and that there's something there and that I'm sealed to my husband and that he is sealed to me and that our children are sealed to us. I think that with our mortal feelings and emotions and our mortal brains, we sort of assign to that whole concept what we think it means and what we think it should be. And I think that we need to be open to a greater understanding that may come to us later as to what it really means to be sealed and what that means for the rest of eternity. I feel the love of my Savior in my life. I feel closer to him than I have in the past. I feel that this new phase of my life where I'm living more by faith than by what I would have considered knowledge, you know, several years ago, I find it to be very spiritual. I think it's easier to feel the Spirit and to just listen and to try to be still and understand that I do not have to know all the answers. I don't have to understand everything right now. I don't have to defend the church or my beliefs to anyone. I am not apologist for the church. I don't have to defend anything that somebody did 150 years ago. That's not my job. They have to answer for anything in their life, and I have to answer for anything in mine. And what I'm trying to do is not hurt anyone and do what Jesus would want me to do. I guess I'm thankful for having gone through this experience because it is changing me in ways that I didn't really expect.
Well, Jackie, thank you so much for your beautiful story, for your courage and your strength and your willingness to share it with everyone else.
No, thank you. And thank you, John, because you helped us immensely.
And thank your dear husband.
Oh, I will. In about 5 minutes.
Beautiful. Okay, Jackie. Well, take care. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Also, this is a shout-out to my tragically hip friends at StudioCase.com in New York City. That includes Travis, Jeff, Enoch, and Tony for designing my new Mormon Stories podcast logo. Please check these amazingly talented guys out at StudioCase.com or email to thank them at info@StudioCase.com. And finally, music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at ClaytonPixton.com or SkyPixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, Pixton.com. Thank you.
Show us the way. Grateful we praise thee with songs of delight. Gladly, gladly we'll walk in.